Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
John, how are you?
I'm good, Jonathan, and Happy New Year to all you guys.
Absolutely. Happy New Year to the Pittsburgh Steelers. More controversy there. Let's start with this. What do you make of Tomlin's handling of this from what you know and have read and covered with this?
Yeah, and of course, I'm coming at this secondhand just like you guys are. I don't cover the Steelers. And last time I saw them play was actually in Baltimore in early November when they seemed to be in complete control of the AFC North race. They beat the Ravens that day pretty handily. And then things gradually began to fall apart. I mean, really, right from the start, they were in trouble this year with the whole Le'Veon Bell situation, and now this whole Antonio Brown mess. And but I wonder, Jonathan, what would people be saying right now about the Steelers if the Cleveland Browns had been able to pick up 10 more yards on that last drive in Baltimore and it kicked a game-winning field goal and the Steelers were getting ready to host a playoff game this Sunday?
Yeah.
And I know that's an ifs and buts situation, but they finished 9-6-1. It's not, and again, they did not play well down the stretch. They did manage to beat the Bengals in their last game, but clearly there's some kind of disconnect going on here. And again, without being there, is Antonio Brown just being a selfish you know what? Was Le'Veon Bell, I think, was very badly advised because he cost himself a lot of money by sitting out the season, and who knows where his career will lead from here. He obviously won't be back in Pittsburgh next year, and I don't think Antonio Brown will be either. And Ben Roethlisberger is 37 years old, and I think they've got a real problem in Pittsburgh. And usually, as we've seen in the last week, the coach is the one who takes the hit when things go wrong. General managers don't get fired very often in the NFL, do they? I mean, it takes a real debacle like the Eli Manning situation in New York a year ago to force a general manager out the door. Usually the general manager fires the coach and says, you know, the coach takes the blame, and they go out and find a new coach and start all over again. I hope that doesn't happen with Mike Tomlin because I think he's been a very good coach for a long time now.
The misdemeanor domestic violence charge against Reuben Foster has been dropped. Quickly will Washington
I can tell you one thing, Paul, real quick, that the Washington football team tweeted about that about 4 seconds after it happened this morning.
Changes nothing, but from their vantage point, I'm sure that they now will say, we knew it was coming, and look how smart we were.
I don't know if they'll go that far, Paul, because particularly in this town, I don't think anybody's going to buy that particular story. What they will say is Reuben Foster deserves to be treated as someone who was falsely charged. I don't know if that's the right word, or someone against whom the charges were dropped, which is the right phrase. He's going to be, and if the league clears him, which you would think it would, they're going to say, hey, we got Reuben Foster. He's a hell of a linebacker. We're really smart guys. And the problem, Paul, is that the reputation of this team, starting with the owner and his henchman, Bruce Allen, is at such a low ebb in this town right now. It's going to be very hard for them to rebuild any confidence. I mean, even this year early on, when they were 6-3, when things were going well, when they were pulling out close games, their stadium was a third empty. And this is a team that used to lead the league in attendance not that long ago, within the last 8 or 9 years, and was one of the most valuable franchises in all of sports not that long ago, within the last 8 or 9 years. And now it's just dropping like a stone, and even real loyalist fans around here, and there are many of them, are just sick and tired of Dan Snyder. They're sick and tired of Bruce Allen. They're sick and tired of the constant mediocrity, and they're sick and tired of the constant turmoil. And this is like a pebble in a lake. The fact that the charges have been dropped against Reuben Foster, it doesn't change the fact the guy's been arrested three times in less than a year. There's got to be some smoke there, if not an actual fire.
Caesars is now the official casino sponsor of the NFL. I don't have an issue with the way gambling is trending in the United States, but I'm wondering, from your vantage point, if this isn't one of the biggest flips in American sporting culture, given how horrified professional sports were of gambling for the longest time, and that now they're partnering.
Yeah, I think Roger Goodell's name should be changed to Inspector Renault, because he was shocked for all those years that gambling was going on. And it's not unique to Goodell, not unique to the NFL. But it always amused me that for all of their public declarations against gambling, why do you guys know this? Paul, you know this. You're at an NFL facility all the time. Why do you think the league has always been so strict about injury reports? For one reason, they know how much money is invested in betting on their games. And if the injury reports aren't reliable, then gamblers would have a big problem, and they didn't want to have a big problem with gamblers even before the Supreme Court ruling. Now that the Supreme Court has ruled, like everybody else, they're going to jump in with both feet because there's a lot of money to be made. And I don't have a problem with the NFL trying to make money, but Paul, you're right, of course, this is the ultimate, one of the ultimate examples of great hypocrisy that goes on in American sports. It's a little bit like when the NCAA consists on referring to college football and basketball players as student athletes, quote unquote.
John Feinstein joins us weekly on the Midday 180.
John, they're having some big time problems selling tickets to the national championship game in Santa Clara, with Alabama and Clemson playing in that game. Ratings were way down for both of the semifinal games this year. Is there a problem with competitive balance even at the top level of college football with this playoff, or is this simply fatigue of two fan bases that have seen each other the last 3 years and they don't want to travel a week after last week's game across the country to watch it again?
Well, one of the reasons that my good friend Bill Hancock has always said that going to an 8-team playoff might be a problem is that it would be difficult to ask fan bases to travel three times rather than, and in the old days he used to defend having the BCS be one championship game because of just this issue that you're bringing up, Chad, that can you ask the fan bases to travel twice? It's an issue with the basketball tournament sometimes, because fan base, it doesn't so much affect the Final Four in terms of ticket sales, but sometimes it affects the first 2 weeks, where a fan base will say, I've only got the money and the time to travel once. I'm going to hold out and hope my team makes the Sweet 16 or makes the Final Four. And that's a legitimate thing to bring up. Bill and I argue all the time about things, but that's one of the things he brings up that is legitimate. And when you're talking about Clemson and Alabama, and it's on the other side of the country, it's after the holidays are over. Many of those fans did travel to see the semifinal games, and now they're being asked to go across the country. And I think, though, Chad, it's at least as much about neutral fans. I had breakfast this morning with David Marinus. You may know his name from,
yep,
because he wrote the great book.
Sure, and his son is here. His son's here in Nashville too.
That's right. And Andrew was there in Nashville, and he wrote that great book on Perry Wallace, who was the first African American to play in basketball in the SEC at Vanderbilt. So I was having breakfast with David, who is a big sports fan, and loves college football. And he looked at me and said, I have no interest in Alabama and Clemson. He said, I'm not going to stay up for the game. I don't care who wins. To me, they're the same team. You know, they're both great programs with great coaches and great athletes. But why should a neutral fan care about them playing again? And, your point about the ratings on Saturday night, or Saturday afternoon and Saturday night, is a good one. Now, I do think that if they took my suggestion, and I'm sure others have suggested this too, and played, the semis should always be on New Year's Day. And what they should do in a year when the Rose Bowl isn't one of the semis, you play three games. You don't let the Outback Bowl be played on New Year's Day, and you don't let the, what was the other second tier bowl, Citrus Bowl, be played on New Year's Day. You play semifinal number one at 1 o'clock Eastern. You play the Rose Bowl at 5, and then you play semifinal number 2 at 8:30 Eastern. And you make ESPN shorten the commercials in the Rose Bowl. It's ridiculous. It's lasting 4 hours every year now. But my point is, you play the 2 semifinals, and if the Rose Bowl's one of the semis, then you only have 2 games on New Year's Day. And then a week later, it doesn't have to be on a Monday night. You know, a week after that, you play the championship game. And I think you'll get better ratings for the semis when they're on New Year's Day, because everybody watches football on New Year's Day. On Saturday night, you know, there are people who have other things to do. And that's one of the reasons why the ratings were down. But I also think, Chad, you addressed another problem, that the travel that's involved for fans, and the fact that, fairly or unfairly, because I think it'll probably be a great football game, a lot of people have Clemson-Alabama fatigue, and that's not the fault of Clemson or Alabama.
Well, and a year ago you had Alabama and Georgia play in Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Right.
In Atlanta, and it was perfect, and it was a sellout.
Yeah, that's
and it
right
was,
in the middle of SEC country,
right,
it was SEC team.
It was right there. So, and I know that venues and people would say, logistically, you just couldn't pull this off. What about not deciding on a location for the game until the game is decided? And then picking a location that's centrally located. If it's Michigan and Alabama, you play the thing in Chicago, or you know, wherever the location may be. That's a bad
right.
example because it's outdoor, but you pick the indoor stadium or the place that makes sense, and you host the game there where you know you're going to have a sellout.
Well, and you make your first point is the thing that Bill Hancock and his people would bring up. Well, the logistics are too hard, except every year they do it for the World Series, don't they? We don't know until, you know, less than a week before the World Series begins what 2 cities are going to host the World Series, and somehow it gets pulled off every year. So it there's no question it would create logistical issues, and what you'd have to do is you'd almost have to have a deal with 4 or 5 stadiums around the country that they're not going to commit to another event on that date or around that date, you know, in the days leading up to that date, because you have to be, you can't be saying somebody's got another event in there. But I think it's a good idea, Chad. I think it's certainly worth trying because, as you said, having the game last year in Atlanta, you know, and that was just a stroke of luck when it was Georgia and Alabama, is certainly a lot better than having it outside of San Francisco when it's Alabama and Clemson.
John, what do you think the future holds for the college football playoff? And on top of that, what do you make of the competitive or the lack thereof games that we've seen through the semifinals thus far?
Well, I think if you go back a year ago, we had one great semi and then a great championship game, both games involving Georgia, the overtime win against Oklahoma and then the overtime loss versus Alabama. But when you have so few games, when there are only 3 games that count towards the national championship total, there's a decent chance that at least 1 or 2 are going to be duds. It's not like the basketball tournament where we could sit through, you know, 2 days on Thursday and Friday the first week, and there, you know, there are going to be 32 games. And out of those 32 games, 2 or 3 are bound to be upsets or near upsets or great finishes. And that's what people are going to remember, are those great finishes. They're not going to remember, you know, we all remember the 1-16 game last year between UMBC and Virginia, but nobody remembers the Radford-Villanova game that was 1-16 that I sat through that was a 25-point blowout at halftime. And that's more likely. So the fewer games you have, Jonathan, to argue with your point that you don't want to see expansion, the better chance you have that a higher percentage are going to be duds. I have always said, and I'm talking like 25 mm-hmm. years ago, that there should be an 8-team playoff. No conference championship games, which are just money grabs anyway. Use that first weekend in December, play quarterfinal games at home sites, so you don't have to deal with the question of fans traveling if the home teams advance, because they don't have to travel till the semis. Then, as I said, hold the semis on New Year's Day and then the championship game. And one of the things you do if you go to 8 is you give the UCFs of the world the opportunity to play in the playoff when they go undefeated, or Utah years ago, or Boise State, or TCU when they went undefeated before they were part of the Big 12. If a team goes undefeated, it's A, in the tournament, and B, guaranteed a first-round home game. Because it does no good to say, okay, UCF, you can be in the tournament, but you play at Alabama first round, or at Clemson first round. because just like with the NIT now, where they give the conference champions from the smaller conferences, the one big conferences that don't win their conference tournament, they say, okay, you're in the NIT. And then they have to go play, you know, at some power school that fails to make the NCAA tournament, and they're gone after one game. So I would like to see an eight-team tournament. It would give us more chances to have good games, and it would give the little guys a legitimate shot. And, you know, people will raise this question. I'm no fan of Urban Meyer or Ohio State, but would they have been a better fourth team than, and I'm not going to say Oklahoma, I'm going to say Notre Dame, because I think Notre Dame was proven to be a fraud in their game against Clemson. Notre Dame beat Michigan in their opening game. Michigan never beat anybody good all year. Every time they played somebody good, they got beat. And then who did they beat the rest of the year? But because they were 12-0 in Notre Dame, and it's a four-team tournament, they had to be in the field.
When you see Rick Pitino coaching in Greece, what does it make you feel? Is there any sadness there?
Not really. No, it's hard for me to feel much sympathy for Rick Pitino, Paul. I don't buy anything he has said about the whole Louisville situation, whether it was the Madam scandal where he tried to blame it all on a 22-year-old assistant who was making $15,000 a year, or more recently the situation with the FBI. And the other thing is, you know, coaches coach. I'm working on a book right now on players, teams, coaches in college basketball who are not in the national spotlight. And I went and I spent a couple days with Cliff Ellis at Coastal Carolina. And Cliff coached at Clemson. He coached at Auburn. He was in the big time for a long, long time. And he could not be happier at the age of 73 coaching at Coastal Carolina, because coaches coach. And I'm not surprised. Larry Brown was coaching overseas till he got fired a week ago. And he's almost 80. So I don't feel any sympathy. And I did laugh out loud when about 5 minutes after Steve Alford got fired, Dick Vitale, who was basically Pitino's official spokesman, tweeted that Pitino should be the next coach at UCLA. Oh, please, dear God, no.
John Feinstein joins us normally Mondays here on the show, and we'll get back to that schedule this coming Monday. John, thank you as always.
Look forward to it, guys. And again, Happy New Year.
Yeah, same to you.